coming to you from sunny Orlando, Florida. Welcome to the Paper Stack Podcast, where we cover current topics in the note industry, give you tactics for your note business, and talk with industry leaders to make you a better note investor. And now, your hosts, Brett Berkey and Rick Allen.
Welcome back to the Paper Stack Podcast. My name is Rick Allen. This is Brett Berkey. We're here for another knowledge dump today, and we haven't done this in a bit. We've been doing a lot of us talking and going over stuff, but today we've got a guest with us. Mm-hmm. I'm super excited about this. Tell us.
Cal Ewing. He's from Canada. Where are you from in Canada?
Calgary, Alberta, Canada.
Okay. Nice. Well, welcome from Calgary, Alberta. Cal, I'm excited to jump into this topic just because another country, still North America. And I know there's a lot of people interested in this space. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to today talk a little bit about your journey, how you got into note investing. And then really, I want to dive into and explore any of the tidbits or advice you can give to people interested maybe in the Canadian market or thinking about investing here, some of the challenges, hurdles, and gotchas that you've come across, overcome, and how things have affected your note investing just by being, you know, in a different country from, I assume you're investing in United States notes predominantly. Sound good?
Yes, that sounds excellent. Happy to be here and discuss.
Awesome, man. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, your history, how you wound up in the note investing space. What were you doing prior to this, or is this full time, stuff like that?
Yeah, so I still live in Calgary. I got started investing in U.S. real estate way back in 2009 when I was still in college here.
Oh, okay.
And I started on the path of the purple books, Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Nice.
They have, you know, the traveling shows they have. They go to different cities. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up taking a bunch of their courses and stuff. And I got really hooked on the idea of real estate. But what I found is a lot of the things they were teaching, you can't do in Canada, or it's a lot more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Our rules are way different than in the U.S. So I'm striking out a lot here, trying to make it work.
What were some of the differences? Like, what was different the rule-wise?
Well, it was a long time ago. I know things like subject to and those kind of strategies you can't do, 1031 exchanges you can't do.
Oh, wow.
And like just the, like even the way we close deals, there's no title companies, so everything's through lawyers. And
oh, wow.
A lot of things people aren't doing. Like there's not a lot of people even back then that were doing assignments, like you can do them, but you know, finding people that know how to do these kinds of strategies is almost non-existent. Mm-hmm. And the big thing I found is public information. So in Canada, pretty much everything's private. Whereas in the U.S., as you guys know, I can look up phone numbers and names. I can pull lists of pre-foreclosures and probates and divorces and all of that. And everything that is private here. So to market for deals, you're literally like cluster marketing, you know, with mailers, but you can't really hyper-target motivated sellers.
Wow. That's interesting.
And our pricing is way different. Like the values, even back then, are way higher than a lot of the places in the U.S. And so, like, for example, rentals, you know, getting cash flowing rentals in a lot of the markets here is really difficult if you do it right.
That's interesting.
So I met a mentor from my city who was investing in Vegas at the time. And this is like the huge wave of foreclosures that hit Vegas. Everything first.
Mm.
And so he was teaching Canadians how to do it and how to invest in the States. And so I've always loved the U.S. and that was kind of my ideal way to invest is in warmer climates so I can escape the snow. And
smart.
I jumped right on board with that idea. And I had a couple of friends of mine. We put our money in and bought our first foreclosure in Vegas. Did a quick flip on it. And, you know, using my mentor's team, like I didn't really know what I was doing, but we had a great team that we had access to. And they basically did it for us, and we made money in real estate.
Nice.
And it was pretty cool. Me being a college student, I didn't even own a house. And so at that point, I was hooked on the idea, but I really didn't know what I was doing. And I like the idea of being the investor that could find the deal. I didn't like the idea of just turnkey, like, here's my money, make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It was kind of boring.
That's cool.
And yeah, so that's what started it. And
was this what, around like 2010, 2012-ish?
2009.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. You were, right at the beginning.
Right in the middle of it.
Yeah. And Vegas got hit pretty hard too.
In Vegas. There was a full-time realtor that would go to the auctions every single day and just get properties. And then some of them we'd have access to just because I knew this guy and he was buying them too. And so then a year later, things started changing and Phoenix crashed. And so he had a team that he built in Phoenix. And so I got a rental property there and we bought it right at the bottom. And within a few years, prices started going up. And so we rode the appreciation wave on that and then ended up selling it, made money there. And so it was pretty cool. But I really wanted to start my own thing. And so I got going in Houston actually. And I did a bunch of wholesaled a lot of houses in Houston from here in Calgary, did some flips, bought some rentals, that kind of thing. But I found it to be quite a challenge doing it remotely.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
Did you do any work with like Net Worth Realty in Houston?
I don't think I ever bought a deal from Net Worth, but I definitely was in contact with them with some of their deals and stuff like that.
Who did you work with over there? Do you remember?
Well, I just started doing my own marketing.
Yeah, yeah.
We did bandit signs and direct mail and that kind of thing. And I just started wholesaling myself.
How did you do the bandit sign? Did you just pay somebody to throw out signs for you?
I tried it one night. I was down in Houston. I got my signs, picked them up, and I went to Baytown, which is like this little kind of suburb area, really blue collar. Mm-hmm. I tried that one night, and I hated it so much. So I was like, I'm never doing this again. So I did find a company that would put them out and track where they were all.
That's awesome.
That's pretty cool.
Police were coming, so they put them out before.
Yes, the code enforcement. I got started in real estate in 2005. Well, that's when I started wholesaling as a wholesaler. And a lot of the guys from Net Worth Realty, we all worked together at a company called RealNet that was, I mean, it was probably the first well put together wholesale industry or company. They had something like 30 offices. They had their own private money, but the hard money or the bandit signs, it was the thing I hated doing the most in sales. It was crazy because it worked. It was just, it got your phone ringing. But man, I mean, I've 5,000, 10,000 of those things I've thrown out. I hated them. I hated writing them. But that's interesting. So you were doing the wholesale thing, Houston, and then what happens? That's 2009, you say?
Well, this would have been starting around 2017. Like it was right before Hurricane Harvey.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so I actually bought a couple houses from wholesalers. Actually, one was from a wholesaler. The other was from a bandit sign. And we started remodeling them. So I really wanted to be a house flipper. That was my goal. And so we had a couple properties that one of them we had our open house scheduled on the Sunday that Hurricane Harvey hit Houston. And it took on like 3 or 4 feet of water.
That's not bad.
So that was rough.
Yeah.
We had flood insurance. And so we got the money to remodel it a second time, but the market a really big hit in that neighborhood. And so our after repair value that we thought we were going to be able to get, like it dropped like 80 grand or something like that.
Wow.
So long story short, I started to realize like this wholesaling game and fixing and flipping remotely, it's definitely doable, but it's
a difficult. Yeah.
I just started getting worn out and I started thinking more about like, okay, passive income is the reason that I started this whole thing, like reading Rich Dad and that, you know, cash flow. So I started looking more into like owner financing. I met Mitch Steven. I don't know if you've ever come across him, but he does a lot of owner financing in San Antonio. And I saw a talk he did and I read his book. But I like this idea of owning notes and owner financing properties and like we're not worrying about repairs and all that. So that sort of got me thinking about notes and financing. And then I came across the subject to strategy and that made a lot of sense. I bought a sub-2 deal from a wholesaler in Houston And we did an owner finance wrap, created a note on that, which we still have. And that was a pretty cool experience. And I was like, all right, this feels better than wholesaling and grinding away from $5,000 and all of that. And so that's what really got me into the idea of notes. And the one piece for me that was difficult is finding the property, convincing the seller that you're going to either buy it with owner financing or do a sub two, then finding your borrower, buyer, and vetting them and getting an RMLO and all those steps involved, like all these pieces that you need to have in place. And I was just like, there's got to be a simpler way. And that's where I started just kind of following people like PaperStack and some of the other node investors out there. And I was like, okay, like this takes all the initial work out of it, just buying the node and not worrying about the property.
It's interesting that you kind of came full circle when you were saying, you know, I liked being the guy getting out there, finding the deals and just giving the money and having it turn and burn. And that's just boring. And now you're like, man, boring is good. Boring is awesome.
I never thought of it that way, but you're right. Yeah. Boring is
that's my favorite kind of investment, is a boring one. So you've been investing then for a couple of years, pretty serious about it. How has it been with investing in Canada? Has it, or living in Canada, investing here? Is there any hurdles that you were like, oh, this is a kind of a gotcha? I would imagine maybe not so much, because you kind of covered all those things in 2009 when you started making that jump. But what's it been like for you just investing in the United States debt from, you know, across the border?
The biggest thing is setting up the right business entities. Yeah. And this is where I think a lot of Canadians get wrong is, you know, everyone's plugged into U.S. content, obviously, because there's so many people, so many investors. And so we're all watching U.S. training and podcasts and stuff like that. And everyone says, like, you know, buy notes or buy properties in LLCs and don't own too many in each LLC, et cetera. But what I found out, finding a really good cross-border accountant, which I think everyone needs to get if you're investing in a different country, is someone that knows both sides.
Interesting.
And so what they've said is Canada doesn't recognize LLCs the same way that the U.S. does.
Okay.
And so if you own properties directly or notes in an LLC, Canada's not going to give you the same tax benefits. And so the ideal structure for a Canadian, and of course, I'm not an accountant. I'm just going to say,
yeah, of course.
Accountants. But I've talked to numerous cross-border accountants and they say, like, you need to have a limited partnership set up in the States. And then for asset protection, you have a shell, like a C corp or maybe even an LLC as the general partner. And then you are the limited partner. And so that protects you from, if you're a limited partner, protects you from getting sued and losing your other assets. But that's the best tax structure for a Canadian, is owning your assets in a limited partnership.
And setting up an LLC as one partner and you as the other partner.
Yeah, the LLC would be called the general partner.
The general.
It takes all the flak. So if they get sued, it's kind of the one that's facing outwards. And then the limited partner, which is what the actual human would be, are a little bit more protected. So they would only lose what they've invested into the limited partnership.
Wow.
I never would have figured that out.
So that's asset protection there, and there's some tax. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, that is really interesting.
That's extremely valuable. I know there's the folks we have in Canada listening right now are going to be like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
is with that, like I might have even heard you guys say, like, don't own too many notes in one LLC. I don't know if you ever know, but lots of people say, like, keep it spread out, right? And the problem is that it costs like $3,000 to $5,000
to set up the
structure. Go ahead.
Is the $3,000 to $5,000 the maintenance on it, or is it just to set it up?
It's to set it up, and then you've got to do your tax filings, right? So you've got to file a return for your limited partnership and your shell company.
Right.
That's a lot of work.
Your personal return. And then you got to also file in Canada your personal return. So there's a lot of filing.
Well, so, you have to file in both countries? Wow.
Is it?
Yeah. So
Once you set it up once, do you think you can like stamp it out and drop cost, or is it like, no, it's just $3,000 to $5,000 every time?
Like, I guess if you have it with the same, you know, attorney or whoever's setting it up, you might be able to drop costs a bit, but it seems like that's kind of the going rate to set everything up.
Oh, wow.
That's a lot.
So I still agree that you'd probably want to have multiple limited partnerships set up when mm-hmm. you start getting serious, but maybe, you know, you got to balance that cost, right? Maybe owning a few more per entity might make more sense financially.
Oh yeah, definitely there. For me, our philosophy kind of whenever we did it heavily was if I ended up taking one back and it was going to become a rental, that immediately got put into a single use, you know, again, for us, a single use LLC here is, I mean, it's $150 to set up, or it's like extremely cheap. So, of course, there's tax stuff, but that makes sense on the asset protection side. Just for $150, like, yeah, I just don't want to slip and fall. That's going to put the whole portfolio at risk. But that's interesting. What else?
You know, bank accounts, that's not that hard to do, get an American bank account.
Oh, it can be.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, like when I was first getting going, I had to drive with my dad was my partner. We had to drive 5 hours to Great Falls, Montana to set up an account at Wells Fargo because it wouldn't let us do it online.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Wow. So we made a father-son road trip out of it. I did end up finding a bank that would allow you to set it up online virtually. But it's a little bit challenging. Like you almost have to take a trip down to get it done. And you need to make sure you can send wire transfers without a bunch of hurdles.
Yeah.
So I'm using, just for the Canadians out there, BMO Harris.
Mm.
They do pretty good.
Yeah.
And then I can deposit checks, you know, through the phone and through the app and stuff. So just want to make sure that you can send wires without having to go into a branch, and just as much online capabilities as possible.
Yes.
With your account.
There's so many things that now that I just hate doing, and going to the bank is one of them.
I've been delaying it for like a week.
It's just like, why can't I do this off my phone? Fortunately, we have I've always, when I started doing this and I started owning my own companies in this and having the people work and just really not working for somebody else, I stumbled into the world of like the community banking, the smaller, and that has just been, that's the best. Like where you can just walk in, meet somebody, that's it. And then you call them. I remember I said, I'll never go back. It was when I was buying real estate. We were wholesaling. We were going to an auction and I didn't have time. I read the auction stuff. I think it was for auction.com maybe. And they were like, you have to show up to this. This is when you're a showed up person. You have to show up with cashier's checks. And I was like, which is just, you know, that's how long ago this was. That's what you had to do. And it was like 5 o'clock or 4:50 on a Friday. And I called up and I was like, I need to get some cashier's checks. And they're like, well, we're closed tomorrow. It's Saturday. And they're like, hold on. We'll have I knew the president of the bank. And so the president of the bank went and met my person there Saturday morning at 7 a.m., opened up the vault, gave us our cashier's checks and then left. And I go, I'll never go back to like a big bank.
That makes sense.
Just as long as they have the technology in place that allows me to do everything online. That's that. And that's one of that's the balancing act, isn't it? It's the, hey, do they have enough tech? You know, you're getting the customer service part, but do they have the tech in place?
What about like the collateral and things like that?
The collateral, the shipping of the collateral. That's one that
you store in the United States, or do you actually have it shipped to you?
So I did my first couple of having it shipped to me, but now I am storing it in the US.
Okay.
Any company that you use or recommend, or is it just with somebody you know, or?
I am using, what's his name in California?
Casey Wilson.
Casey Wilson, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Started
working with them. Yeah, that's good. That's they perform our collateral verifications and. Mm-hmm. I've directed a lot of people to them. So it's, you know, the systems and the processes that they can actually help you with. I remember when I first got started buying notes in 2012, we purchased probably 8 or 9 notes and we had the collateral shipped right to us. And then we were moving through one of them and they're like, yeah, I don't show that you own this. Is the, you know, there's no recorded assignment. And I'm like, recorded assignments? So we went and looked. I was like, we didn't record any of these assignments on all these loans that we bought. So at that point, we started using, actually, it was somebody different at the time, but we're like, okay, I don't even want the collateral shipped here. We just set up a process. When we buy something, it gets shipped to them. They scan it, they index it, they record all the assignments, and then they hold it for us. And it's well worth it. If you're going to grow, it's well worth it. Even if you're not, even if you don't plan on getting huge, it's just well worth it to put it in the hands of professionals.
But they go through it too.
They'll scan it, index it. Mm-hmm. They'll give you an exceptions list of what you're missing or anything like that, which is key. Because you have to have it.
Yeah.
So are you predominantly buying already originated notes, or are you still doing some of the origination side yourself, or a little bit of a happy mix of both?
No, already originated now.
Nice.
So PaperStack is your key source.
Yeah, PaperStack has been awesome.
Cool.
I recommend any note buyers that are potential note buyers that reach out to me. I always say, like, even if you just buy your first couple with PaperStack before buying anywhere else, just because it's so easy to go through everything you've set up, the whole system just is such a, basically it's holding your hand through the whole process. So I tell everyone that I talk to, like, go through PaperStack first, even if you find a note elsewhere, close through that platform, just so you know how it works and you get a feel for the whole system. So.
That's cool. That's good. And when we built this, we built it because I was like, I need something to help run my business. And for me, people are like, oh, you must not, you must get a good deal. I was like, no. I was like, I pay full price. I want to pay full price, because for me, not doing it on the platform is just, it's a pain in the butt. I'm like, things get missed. If it's nothing else, just because all the paperwork is just done for me and I don't have to deal with any of that stuff. And then another big thing for me is if I ever needed to go back and look at something or find something, I know exactly where it is. It's always right there on the timeline, all the phone calls. And so, people, I know sometimes I've heard investors, like, they'll try to go around the platform. I'm like, I don't know why you would do it. I don't feel like we're overpriced. I feel like it's a good deal for what you're getting. It's good to hear that people just, use the platform.
Yeah. I like that. That's good for me. So, like, overall, okay. So I guess the main, if a Canadian was listening, his main hurdle would be just mostly, it seems like, the bank account. Deal structure and a limited partnership. There's a couple steps, huh? That's make sure you're set up correctly. And make sure you find a bank that can wire to the States. But you have to have because you said you have a Canadian bank. You don't need an American bank, so you don't need the Wells Fargo anymore? Or do you?
Well, there's a lot of the Canadian banks now have a U.S. affiliate.
U.S. branches.
Okay.
Yeah, U.S. branches. So, and that's what my bank is. But you still need to make sure that you're setting up in the U.S. Because, like, a lot of times you can set up a U.S. dollars account in your Canadian bank, but that's not going to work. From what I've experienced, you need a U.S. bank, U.S. branch, all of that set up. And I really don't know, like, if you're buying notes just from your personal Canadian bank account, I guess you can do that. I've always done it through my company, so I'm not really sure how that would work. If there's any hurdles, like, have you guys sold any notes through PaperStack to Canadians directly?
I mean, there's been a number of them that have bought from Canada. Only thing that's ever been really at all difficult was figuring out how to do this international shipping label.
The shipping stuff. I've wired to Canadian banks before, for sure.
Okay.
I've definitely done that, because I get through the whole process. I'm like, international wire. I got to change. That's interesting. What, any benefits that you see? You're like, I don't know what the exchange rate is right now. Is it pretty level, or is it? No.
No, like, the last time it was level was right around when I got started, 2009. It was like par. So that was really cool.
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah. I remember I would go up to Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, across the lake from Canada. My family, we had property right in the lake. So, of course, when I was 18, I would cross the bridge and go to Canada, and the dollar always would go a little further there. And I don't know what it is. Is it 80, or what is it right now?
I don't even know. Everything I do, all my transactions are U.S., like, through my U.S. company, so I don't really keep much track of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do tell, like, Canadian investors, like, yeah, you're going to be you know, you're going to have to convert your funds to US, but you're going to get paid in US dollars.
Mm-hmm. And that's so, the thing is, but when it comes back over, it's just, you know,
it balances out.
Yeah. It kind of works itself out.
Yeah. And like, I've only seen us par once. I don't even know the last time before that it was at par. So it's not like you're going to be converting your funds and then suddenly the Canadian dollar and the US dollar are going to be equal and you're going to lose all that exchange. Like, it's going to shift a bit, but still think it's worth it for the opportunities down there versus here. Like, I don't even think that I've seen, I don't know if you can buy notes as a private investor. Like, you can do owner finance. We call it vendor take back here.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no market that I've seen where you can actually buy Canadian notes that I know of.
Yet.
Yeah, I've never seen a Canadian note on the site.
I haven't seen one yet on the site, but it's only, I think if there was a market, you know, if people were like, oh, I've got this vendor take back loan and I'd like to sell it. Most of the time what I've found, especially when we were marketing for notes, is a lot of the people who own the notes are like, I didn't know I could actually sell this. It's kind of like, I thought I was stuck with it. And I'm like, no, you can sell it and get, you know, take a discount. So good stuff, man. Well, any words of advice or words of wisdom for people thinking about jumping into the business right now, maybe US or Canadian, anybody, just what's your, you know, some thoughts from Cal?
Yeah, well, I get a lot of folks, especially from Canada, that they hear I'm investing in US real estate and their first reaction is, oh, that sounds risky or sounds complicated, different country. And they immediately shut that down in their mind. But I've always found it's way easier to do transactions down there. To me, that's like, to me, buying stuff in Canada, investing in Canada is foreign now. You just got to have the right people on your team. So whether that's, like I say, cross-border accountants, attorneys, you know, mentors that are doing it already, but it's not that hard. And there's a ton of opportunity in all avenues of real estate down in the States. There's so many properties. You can buy properties for way cheaper. Like the company I work for, where I underwrite loans, we're talking like properties in the middle of nowhere in the mountains in British Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
They're like $700,000-$800,000.
Wow.
Far from everywhere. Dumpy kind of properties. So there's just so much more opportunity to choose from at all price levels down there. And then, you know, the strategies that you can do are just so many more. So don't shut down the idea that because it's a different country, you can't do it or it's going to be hard. Like, buying real estate is hard when you're getting started, no matter where you start. You just got to do it.
That's good advice.
That's great advice.
Yeah, that's real good.
All right, cool, man.
I appreciate you coming on. This was fun.
Yeah.
And I actually learned a lot about
the technical distractions that were going on.
Oh, geez. Yeah, that was a surprise. But yeah.
I just want to say I love what you guys are doing, and I've learned so much just from watching your podcast. So
cool.
Keep it up, and I'm happy to be part of it.
That's awesome. Thank you so much.
Good stuff, man. Well, you got any events you're going to, or do you go to events, anything like that, or?
I'm not going to right now. I know there's one coming up in Nashville that I'm going to get to, but it's right in the middle of softball season, and I'm coaching my girls. So.
Oh wow.
Nothing.
You guys have a lot in common.
Yeah. How old are your girls?
16 and 8.
Wow. Oh wow, you coach them both?
Just a 16-year-old right now.
Oh wow, is it like travel ball or rec ball or what is it?
No, yeah, just a community league.
Mm-hmm.
Not too high level, but we love it. We have a lot of fun. So we have a pretty short season here. So like our first practices are all going to have to be indoor because like April and May are either snow or rain, a lot of it. So.
Oh wow.
It's
easier then.
Yeah, I coach my daughter's her 12U team, and we played a tournament actually this weekend. We had a team down from Maine. And they were like, yeah, it's our first tournament. And I mean, we've been going since, we only take off July and December are our months off. The rest of the time, it's like year round. It's a blast. So I've coached baseball, soccer, basketball, and like girls fast pitch softball is like the best. It's like so fast paced and it's just so much fun. So that's cool, man.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, good stuff, man. Appreciate you joining us from Calgary, Alberta. This is Rick Allen, Brett Berkey, Cal Ewing saying come join us on the next episode of the Paper Stack podcast. And really enjoy this one. Cal, thanks for joining us.
Thanks. See ya.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
Bye.
Are you new to the mortgage note industry? Have you been wanting to learn the step-by-step process to purchase your first mortgage note? Well, you're in luck. We've convinced our CEO, Rick Allen, to break down everything he knows about mortgage note investing. Through a series of 50 videos, you'll get everything from start to finish of where to purchase notes, how to purchase notes, and all of Rick's investing techniques he has developed over the many years. From performing note tactics to non-performing notes, Rick gives you everything he knows about investing. Bonuses include our glossary of industry terms, Rick's own proprietary calculators he created to evaluate notes, discounts from our partners, our Rolodex of vendors, a private Facebook group, along with a lot more. We've packed so much content into the Academy to take you from beginner to expert in no time. To learn more about the Academy, go to academy.paperstack.com/welcome. Again, that is academy.paperstack.com/welcome.